In the meeting, so I'll call the meeting to order and good morning. And our first agenda item would be to announce whether a quorum is present. And you probably all heard the committee clerk indicate that we do have a quorum. So the first motion would be the approval of the minutes. Representative Olson.
Mr. Chair, I move the minutes from April 27th, 2020.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, if everybody could unmute, we'll do this by voice vote. Everybody ready? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. We have first bill up today is House File 4415, Representative Davney to pay school employees.
Or were your comments saying that we should leave this in? I wasn't 100%.
Excuse me? Somebody was speaking. Couldn't even pick up what they were saying. Okay, well, we now have House File 1603 before us. That's Representative Davney's bill to provide for the payment of certain school district employees. So, Representative Davney, would you care to move your bill? Is Davney aboard?
You recommended to be placed on the general register.
Representative Davney, there's something we can't hear you very well.
Is this any better, Mr. Chair?
That's better.
Okay, let me start over then, sir. Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 4415, the second engrossment, be recommended to be placed on the general register.
Okay, and Representative Davney, there is an amendment, the A21 amendment. Would you care to move the amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd move the A21 amendment. It's technical in nature and better aligns the language in the bill with the way Minnesota management and budget would like it identified.
Okay. Any discussion on the motion to adopt the amendment? Seeing none, I guess everybody has to unmute. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carried. The bill is now amended. Representative Davney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll narrow my focus today to the fiscal aspects of the bill, given that this is Ways and Means. But our goal with this legislation is to support schools, staff, students and families, and those school communities by directing a stable and predictable path amid what is a very challenging situation. In this legislation, we're looking forward, anticipating some of the challenges that our schools, staff, and families are experiencing and planning for them. We do this to focus in on the finance aspects by allowing for a set of school finance formula adjustments to limit any revenue losses in fiscal years 2020, 2021, and 2022 because of school program changes as a result of the distance learning ordered by the governor due to the COVID-19 pandemic. These changes are all designed to be revenue neutral compared to the February budget forecast of the K-12 budget base. This assures school districts that they receive the revenues that they had budgeted for so that they can in turn pay staff the salaries that they had budgeted for. We provide in this bill flexibility for the regional libraries to use regional telecom library aid to increase access to the internet across the state, either through their provision of Wi-Fi or provision of devices, hotspots. We allow school district accounting systems to continue to categorize in the state UFAR system employee salary and benefit costs as if they were performing their regular jobs in a regular manner in a regular school year to allow for better tracking of expenses. We have also proposed allowing schools and districts expanded flexibility in transferring funds from different accounts within their budget. This language is permissive to allow districts to best manage their expenses with their revenues as they see fit. And lastly, we proposed protecting teachers, administrators, and student teachers moving forward on establishing or renewing their license to teach in Minnesota to assure that they can greet students again next fall. This moves some revenue for the Professional Educators Licensing and Standards Board, PELSB, from the current fiscal year into the next fiscal year, all within this biennium, and requires some IT changes and thus expenses to their website. With that, Mr. Chair, I stand ready for questions.
Okay, thank you. And I do want to, when we're voting, you unmute, and then you should mute again after that, because it wasn't too bad, but we were, Representative Dabney was doing his presentation, getting a little feedback. So if people could be sure to unmute and then mute as we're proceeding, that would be helpful. Any discussion on the bill? Well, seeing none, Representative Dabney, would you care to renew your motion? Or, whoops, one Representative Cresha's hand just went up. Representative Cresha.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the bill author. Just quickly, I know we've been back and forth on this through Ed Finance, and there's a lot of good pieces in here with the flexibility, the spending, and all that. Just a top-line comment, I know a lot of comments have been made outside of the legislature on this, and just to remind people that even Commissioner Rickards acknowledges, and I think it's important to acknowledge, this bill doesn't actually protect hourly workers in the event that schools still need to lay off or do employment adjustments. Nor should we kid ourselves that if any school district is not paying somebody and asking them to do work, that wage theft laws apply to them. And also that, you know, I think it's hard and there's, you know, so there's no misconception. Even this bill cannot provide funding to guarantee compensation beyond the existing funding, which could come from a loss of revenue and fees. So it's important in times like this that we let everybody know and our schools know what we can and can't do, and these will be very difficult times ahead.
Okay, any further discussion? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Dabney. I just, since I'm not on education finance, there was a lot of discussion previously about whether this issue was already taken care of in one of the executive orders. And there was an allegation made that that the hourly employees were going to be paid by action of an executive order. And I had read through the executive orders looking for that provision and didn't find it. So I just wonder if you could clarify that. Now, I know there are a lot of other pieces in this bill as well, but that one, I think, is still one that needs clarification. If you could do that for us, please.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Liebling, thank you for that question, because there has been maybe perhaps some misinformation on this point. Guidance from the Department of Education directs school districts to find meaningful work for employees and to compensate them. Unfortunately, guidance does not have the rule of law. And our schools and communities need the assurance, and the staff and families need the assurance that laws provide them at this time. This is about whether we want the economy in Minnesota to come back by making sure that there are customers for those Main Street businesses that, as we start to reopen, need customers. The only way a market economy works is if you've got a buyer willing and able to meet with that seller. And providing these families legal assurance that money is coming in, that they're able to make their budgets and then have money in their pockets to spend on Main Street is key to both those families and their communities. Thank you for the question.
Yeah, Representative Liebling, was that you're done? Any other questions or comments? Any more discussion? Well, seeing none, Ms. Sparkman will take the role, and being that this is passage now, unlike our earlier votes, which could be voice vote, this will have to be a roll call. So,
Mr. Chair?
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to make sure we've got the I's crossed and the T's dotted, I'd like to renew my motion that House File 4415, the second engrossment as amended, be recommended to be placed on the general register. Thank you. Well,
I was just about to ask you that, so very good. And
all right.
I was giving Ms. Sparkman a heads up, but if you're ready, we'll take the roll.
Representative Carlson?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Garofalo?
No.
Representative Albright?
No.
Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Representative Davids?
Aye.
Representative Dabney?
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski?
No.
Representative Eklund? Representative Hamilton?
Aye.
Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Representative Hausman?
Aye.
Representative Hertas?
No.
Representative Hornstein?
Aye.
Representative Kreshta?
No.
Representative Liebling?
Aye.
Representative Lilly?
Aye.
Representative Long?
Aye.
Representative Mariani?
Aye.
Representative Marquardt?
Aye.
Representative Nelson?
Aye.
Representative Neuer?
Aye.
Representative Pawlowski? Representative Poppy? Representative Schumacher? Representative Scott?
No.
Representative Torkelson?
No.
Representative Vogel?
No.
Representative Wagenius?
Yes.
Ms. Sparkman, in light of what happened the other day with Pawlowski not able to get in, what I've decided we should be sure to do is go back and call the names of anyone who didn't vote to give them an opportunity, especially if we're running into any technical problems.
Representative Eklund?
Aye.
Representative Pawlowski? Representative Pawlowski?
Pawlowski votes aye.
Representative Poppy?
Aye.
Representative Schumacher? Representative Schumacher?
No.
I think we've got, do we have anybody not voting yet? Okay.
20 ayes, 9 nays.
Okay, 20 ayes and 9 nays. The motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
We'll now go to the next bill on the agenda. Representative Nelson's bill dealing with elections. That will be House File 3429. So Representative Nelson, would you care to move the bill?
The first engrossment be recommended to be placed on the general register.
Okay, that motion is before us, and we do have some amendments. So Representative Nelson, would you care to move the first amendment, the A20-0749?
I'll move the A20-0749 amendment. And Mr. Chair, I'll describe the amendment. This is the election, the HABA bill, then the election bill dealing with election procedures during the COVID emergency. And we have an amendment to that that has been some negotiated language that we've been negotiating with the minority to get comfort on the bill.
Okay, so that is the amendment that's before us, and now there's an amendment to the amendment. Representative Nelson.
And Mr. Chair, the A4 amendment, it's like, again, as I move the A4 amendment, and the A4 amendment is basically comfort language for the minority and some minor tweaks. The first one, if you go through this from the top, it's basically adding to the, it's the leading part of the language, but it's adding to the process for processing the ballots, the absentee ballots that are coming in. There was a concern from the election officials around the state about the mass number of, even before the COVID, a large number of absentee ballots that were going to come in, and some concerns about being able to get them counted. So they asked for days before the election. Currently in law, it's 7 days before the election they can start counting the absentee ballots. They're moving it to 14 days for this election, both the primary and the general election. And they asked for time after the election because a large majority of the absentees come in the last couple of days before the election. So they wanted to have time to make sure everybody's vote got counted. The language that's in the amendment basically stipulates that no ballots that come in after the current timeline that are after the election date can be counted. And that's the language there. The other piece of this, there's a deleting a reference to the Commissioner of Health. There were some concerns about giving power to the executive branch, and this would leave it in the locals that if they're going to be moving, have to move an election, a polling place because of the COVID, because of concerns about that we're leaving it with them to make sure they do it in the place that's healthy and takes into consideration health considerations for the people that are there. The other two pieces of this amendment add to the two pieces of the HABA, which is the basic reason why this is at here, is that no uses of this money, or this money can't be used for anything that's not prescribed in the federal HABA legislation that sent this money to us. And that goes into two places, one in the section 4 and one in section 5, I believe is the right, is if I got my numbers right here, that basically, like I said, it makes sure that that money can't be spent, Secretary of State's office can't spend this money on anything other than what is prescribed in federal law. And that's the A4 amendment. And I ask for your support.
Okay, any discussion, Representative Albright, on the A4 amendment? Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I first want to thank Chair Nelson, along with the Secretary of State, Mr. Simon, for recognizing the import of a strong bipartisan elections bill. I think we identify with the provisions in here, and I would urge members of the GOP to support the amendment.
Okay, any further discussion then on the A4 amendment? Seeing none then, you'll have to unmute to vote. We'll do this by voice vote. Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none then, all those in favor of the A4 amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. Now we have the amendment before us, the A20 amendment as amended. So any discussion on the A20 amendment as amended? Okay, seeing none, we'll take a voice vote. I'll give everybody a chance to unmute. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. We now have the bill before us as amended. Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair, this was the bill that was heard in state government finance. It was House File 3499. We're amending it onto this bill 3429 because that matches up with the bill that's in the Senate that Senator Kiffmeyer is the author of, and that way we can get negotiations going on this bill. That's before us because of two provisions in here in Section 4 and Section 5. The two HAVA bills that came from the federal government, the money we got, the 6.9 that we got last December, and the 7.4, I believe it is, that we got in March. I may have those backwards. But anyway, both of those required a 20% match. So there's a match of $1.4 million for the one and $1.7 for the other, and so for a total of $2,864,023 worth of matching dollars the state has to come up, and that's what this bill is for. One caveat on this is that there's been some discussion with some of the ongoing COVID legislation they're discussing in the federal government, is that they may take the match off for the what we're calling the HAVA $3, which is the dollars that were sent to us in March, and then there's language in the bill that would, in case that happens, if it happens before July 1st, the money will not go into the account. If it happens after, then the money will revert back from the HAVA account in the Secretary of State's office back to the general fund. And that's the gist of the bill, and that's why the bill in Ways and Means.
Okay, and with that amendment that we just adopted, and assuming that if the bill then passes, we will not need to take up House File 3499. Just so we're clear on that, Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, tipping my hat to Chair Nelson for just a strong bipartisan effort to bring forward an election bill that recognizes the import of elections, particularly in light of COVID-19. The bill does recognize that this is a one-time occurrence, with the provisions in this bill snapping back to our normative elections statutes after the general election in November. And members, I think we can all be very proud of the work that was done. It was not a streamlined process. Was certainly endeared itself to quote unquote vibrant conversations. But I think as Chair Nelson and I said to one another over the course of the last couple of days, we held true to the word of communication with one another, and to recognize and respect each other's differences while also respecting the need for providing the state and the folks that call Minnesota home with an opportunity to vote going forward. So with that, members, I would urge a strong bipartisan yes vote on this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Hey, thank you, Representative Albright. Representative Nelson, would you care to renew your motion?
Mr. Chair, I'll renew my motion that House File 3429 as amended be recommended be placed on the general register.
Okay, and being that this is passage, this will need to be a roll call. So, Ms. Markman, are you ready?
She needs to unmute. Yeah, there we go.
Representative Carlson?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Garofalo?
Yes.
Representative Albright?
Aye.
Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Representative Davids?
Aye.
Representative Dan?
Aye.
Representative Joskowski?
No.
Representative Eklund?
Aye.
Representative Hamilton?
Aye.
Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Representative Hausman?
Aye.
Representative Hertas?
No.
Representative Hornstein?
Aye.
Representative Kreisha?
Aye.
Representative Liebling?
Aye.
Representative Lilly?
Aye.
Representative Long?
Aye.
Representative Mariani?
Aye.
Representative Marquardt?
Aye.
Representative Nelson?
Aye.
Representative Neuer?
Aye.
Representative Pawlowski?
Aye.
Representative Poppy?
Aye.
Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, aye.
Representative,
did you say Scott?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, you cracked up there. Yeah, aye.
Representative Torkelson?
Aye.
Representative Vogel?
Aye.
Representative Wagenius?
Aye.
27 ayes, 2 nays.
Okay, and that means everybody that wanted to vote has voted. So the motion prevails. And thank you, Representative Nelson.
Thank you.
Being that this was very bipartisan, thank you, Representative Albright, as well. I was kind of being informed, if you will, the last few hours about discussions taking place, and so glad everything was resolved. We now have the next bill on the agenda, House File 2768, by Representative Lilly. That's the labor agreements and compensation plan to be ratified. This will be a division report. So Representative Nelson, would you care to move the division report?
Mr. Chair and members, I move the State Government Finance Division report for House File 2768.
And just to clarify, you know, we go back and forth. Some bills are division reports, some are not. As we've discussed in previous meetings, a bill goes out the way it came in. And so this one came in last year and would be subject to the process that we had in place last year. Other bills that we've taken up have been referred to us from the general orders at times, and so we have a slightly different process. So any discussion on the division report? Seeing none, then everybody on mute, voice vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Representative Lilly, if you would care to move your bill.
Hi, Mr. Chair and members. I'd like to move that House File 2768 be recommended to pass and placed on the, or recommended to be placed on the general register, rather. Sorry. Thank you.
I think we should say House File 2708 as amended be recommended to pass. That's what I think I have before me here. Okay, and if there are no amendments, so Representative Lilly, if you'd care to explain the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I think it is 2768 is my understanding, but this bill.
Did I not say 2768?
Mr. Chair, I think at the end you said 08, but.
Okay, well, just to be sure, clear. It's 2768 that's before us. Got to get used to all this technology.
Nope, you're doing great. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill ratifies the labor contracts and compensation plans for our state employees. Most of you are members that have been here for a while, and the newer members might need to know these contracts are negotiated between MMB and the labor groups and our state employees. These employees deliver services, all over the state, from one end to the other, from side to side, they're probably more important now ever than ever with this pandemic that we're all facing. They're frontline response workers. We have nurses. We've got, we see the Commissioner Malcolm on the news, and a lot of the team that's working behind her is these employees, food safety workers, correction workers, unemployment, all the deed stuff, unemployment counselors, emergency loan counselors, in the correction facilities. These people, remember last year where we had lost a correction officer, and what they face, how soon we forget about that with this pandemic, of course. But and then all the great things at the universities that we're hearing about in the news, a lot of these employees are covered by this. And certainly, like if you were a nurse at the VA, dealing with some of the folks right now. But anyways, these contracts cover the breadth of our team, the state workers, and these are negotiated going back to the beginning between the governor and a lot of these go back the last year. I think of myself, I work for a company that, we were given raises and profit sharing. As we look into the new world, I think the employees know that in the next contract, things are going to be very different. But this is, again, these are negotiated between the governor and typically it's pretty straightforward, or should be. These are negotiated in good faith. And, I don't want to say, we ratify them, and then they go into, and some of them are already in place. And so they've seen since July, this goes back to July 1st of 19. So we're in, almost to July of this year. I mean, we're not quite, but we're getting close to that. And it's almost, we're almost halfway into some of these contracts. So anyways, I'm talking far longer than I normally do, but these are important workers that are helping us implement what we do as policymakers. And usually we don't get really involved. I mean, can you imagine all of us, 60 some senators and 134 of us, if we got involved in negotiating contracts, it would be quite a mess. So these are negotiated with MMB and the team. And I have on here is Mr. Hubinger with the employee relations, and he could get into the details of the bill if that's okay, Mr. Chair, or however you want to proceed.
Phil, Representative Lilly will call for a discussion, and we'll see where that leads. But if you'd like to call on him, if necessary, that would be just fine. And again, being that I misspoke, I just looked my notes. I sometimes pencil things in, and the top of the six I blotted out, so that's why I said 08. But just so everybody's clear, the bill that's before us and the motion by Representative Lilly is that it's House File 2768, if anybody is listening. Any discussion on the bill? Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Connolly could bring up the spreadsheet that I asked her to post last night, that would be helpful. I had some information on there that I'd like to share.
Ms. Connolly, can you do that?
Members, I do not have the sharing function activated, but it is online and it was included in the materials that were sent to you, so you can access that through your computers.
Representative Vogel.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. So if people then are looking at it, the spreadsheet itself is the work of the, I believe, MMB that submits the information to SER for their use. And everything above line 53 and to the left of column Q is that information. What I did was, though, I wanted to look at what are the effects of this contract that we're looking at on the budget, recognizing that things have changed drastically since the contracts were negotiated, and looking at where do we go from here. And it's not a reflection on the employees, the rewarding them for what they are doing. It's, to me, the financial reality of the situation we're facing. And being a small business owner and knowing a lot of small business owners, I know the dilemma everybody is in, and life has now changed drastically since last summer and the last time that we for sure had a surplus, which was on June 30th of 19, just prior to these contracts being negotiated. So if you look at line 54 and you go across, what that does is it just simply totals the different columns. Now, as you can see on E54, it comes to $8,165,000,000. That was the last base that we worked with in the actual from the last biennium. If you go to column G on line 54, that was the projected base that we had from the bills that we passed. If you go to column J, that's actually what MMB is, from my understanding, is saying that the contracts actually came to. So if you look down in that little green area underneath there, it says 2021 change from projected. That means that the contracts actually came in $219 million more than what the legislation had intended. And I think that's not, unfortunately, untypical. So the number that I use to look at the future impacts is the number on J54, which is the actual biennial base that we're working with now going into 2021. If you go over to Q, which is a column that I added, that takes into account the what we have been paying plus the column O, which was the impact on the next biennium of dollars. And that comes to then $9,510,000,000. And that's what I was looking at when I looked at these contracts and the financial impact that they're having on us as a state, is using that number. I put in some percentages there for reference, but the real key is down in that yellow box on line 62 and 63. Because if you look at from the last time that we know we had a surplus, which was on June 30th of last year, until the effects of these contracts would have on the next biennium, because once they're in place, the raises keep going on, it's a $1,345,000,000 increase. And that's what's concerning me, Mr. Chair and committee members, is that I don't disagree a bit with the suggestion that we have great people and they're doing great jobs and they need to be rewarded. But at this point, it just doesn't seem financially prudent that we should be approving contracts when we don't know financially where we're going to be, and especially to the tune of $1,300,000,000. So that's the reason I put this spreadsheet together, is just to bring some clarity to the real numbers we're talking about and the real issues that we're facing. And again, I'm not taking anything away from the great employees we have and the necessity for treating people well, but I do think that financially it's not prudent when we are making these type of decisions, not knowing exactly where we're going and probably headed for a deficit because of the revenue shortfalls we're going to have. So I appreciate your indulgence in my time and looking at the spreadsheet, Mr. Chair. I'd be glad to answer any questions, but that's what I have to offer. Thank you.
Okay, any further discussion? We've got a couple of other people that are going to be asking questions. I don't know if they're on the Vogel information or not. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I guess my question is for Mr. Hubinger, and it's a couple of questions I have. One is that these compromise, my understanding is that the budgets we passed last year assumed these contracts were going to be settled and that money was in the budget. And what I guess the other question I'll ask them both is if the contracts are higher than what they have budgeted for, well, how do they normally work that in the departments of the different places where they work? How do the commissioners have to deal with that? Mr. Hubinger.
Yes, Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Greg Hubinger with the Legislative Coordinating Commission and the Subcommittee on Employee Relations. Representative Nelson, as you indicate, there is no appropriation tied to this bill. Agencies are required to pay for the increased cost of these contracts within their existing appropriations. If these costs exceed the amounts that they had originally budgeted, they would need to rely on other mechanisms such as salary savings or vacancy savings or reprogramming in order to generate the funds that they need to pay for these increases.
Representative Nelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And so, Mr. Members, again, there is no additional cost to the state. These are contracts that were negotiated in good faith. And just like any contract we have, we need to abide by them and go forward. If at some time in the future we have to make budget cuts because of decreased revenue because of the COVID crisis, we as the legislature will have to do that. And then the commissioners and the departments will have to make their budget cuts and decide how they're going to make those budget cuts work that we give to them. But we shouldn't be punishing our hardworking employees that negotiated in good faith. And now some people are trying to say that we shouldn't be honoring these contracts. And I don't think that's a good way for the state to work.
Okay, Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my comment and question probably directed to the author and to Mr. Hubinger as well. Rep. Vogel, thank you for doing that spreadsheet. Just like when we pass legislation and it goes to conference committee, we do side by sides, and it's very impactful to look at the spreadsheet you put together and look at the columns and to do the side by side of how things are changing. And, you know, it's important to note, as I have observed the side by side that Rep. Vogel has put together, that we're looking at a 16% increase in these contracts over the previous two bienniums at 16.48%. If you divide that out by three bienniums, that's averaging about 5.5% increase per year, which probably significantly exceeds the rate of inflation and the consumer price index and even the governor or government price inflator that is preferred to use by government in terms of projecting costs. But what is of special concern to me is how the numbers in which contracts are negotiated and what the amounts were originally believed come in substantially higher, and to be unable to project costs by more than $200 million, I think is suggesting that there's quite a failure in being able to predict what the costs are going to be. And I wouldn't think it would be that difficult to know how many employees are under contract and what the salaries and wages are to accurately predict or project what these contracts are going to cost. So that's my biggest concern. I too agree that a contract is a contract and they need to be honored, but I don't think it's a good faith representation to the legislature when the estimates are so wildly wrong. And that oftentimes seems to be the case with government. And I realize it's maybe difficult. So my question to Mr. Herbinger or to the author, you know, is the overrun attributable to new hires or FTEs that are the result of legislation? How do we get a handle on hundreds of millions of dollars of overrun on labor contracts?
I think your question was probably more to Mr. Herbinger at this point. Mr. Herbinger?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hertas, the biennial base calculation, it would have been done in April of 2019. And MMB has explained that while they have a fairly sophisticated model for projecting costs that takes into account normal turnover and retirements and that sort of thing, it cannot take into account the effect of the actual appropriations and program changes that agencies take on as a result of legislation in the 19 and the 20 session. So that leads to one set of changes in the cost of the contracts. In addition, they have assumptions about retirements and turnover, but if the actual experience is different, that will affect their projected amounts as well.
Can Representative Lilly want to comment? He mentioned both you and Mr. Herbinger. Representative Lilly.
Sorry, that was me. I had to mute on. Mr. Chair and Representative Hertas, I think Mr. Herbinger covered it well. I hear what you're saying, and you know, it's not a perfect system. I think some of the changes that he mentioned that we do as legislators changes these numbers, and there's variables in turnover, but it's not a perfect system, and I respect that, and I always enjoy Mr. Vogel's research, quite honestly. I mentioned that at the last committee, and I know he does his homework well, and I appreciate that.
Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for those explanations. I understand that we're looking at the total cost of labor contracts, not necessarily the salaries and wages of individuals in particular, but what is always of concern is when there are increases, the next contract is always based on a percent, again, over base. And you know, as you keep adding on additional labor contract amounts or increases that are exceeding what the private sector is doing, percent on percent compounds over time, and it makes a wildly different scenario for individuals working in government as opposed to the private sector. So those are my comments, and I just think that people expect us to kind of hold the line on state government spending. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Garofalo. Representative Garofalo. Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lilly wanted to ask about the percentages of increase and how that compares to other states. My understanding is that these are below national averages and well in line with what other states have been doing, if you could speak to that.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr.
Herbinger, either one.
Mr. Chair and Representative Long, that's right. Our state is honestly a little bit behind in some of these, and some of it's catching up to what the market will bear. We've suffered as a state where we've had a hard time with retention in certain areas, with nursing and different areas. It's a competitive world out there, and we're finding that through this COVID, the people that are working, might make more money at home. I mean, that's not the case here, but competition's real, and we want to keep the good staff. Turnover hurts government just like it would a private business. Anytime there's costs related to new hires and those sort of things. So Mr. Hubinger could probably hop on and get a little more specific about how we compare to other states, but you know, one of the things that doesn't come out is that when you get the higher percentages, sometimes it's people that aren't at the top of their pay scale. So there's other steps, as there would be with any work, where you you know, you do your time, you start at the lower wage, and then you kind of graduate through different levels of pay. But if it's all right, Mr. Chair, I'd like to pass to Mr. Hubinger, if that's possible.
Yeah, that's just fine. Mr. Hubinger?
Mr. Chair and Representative Long, MMB in its negotiations focuses primarily on two markets, the internal markets and then state markets, as the place where they need to be competitive. And so they're very much in tune with what other state-wide employers or other employers in the state pay. And that's their focus for what they're using for benchmarks for their negotiating positions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one more question.
Representative Long.
Thank you. And Representative Lilly, I think you did a good job in laying out who we're talking about. We're talking about scientists at the Minnesota Department of Health who are doing the epidemiological work right now and the infectious disease lab. We're talking about workers who are processing unemployment insurance claims and working harder than ever right now. We're talking about the folks in our state-operated facilities and prisons. You know, and we could go on and on. These are folks who are keeping our state safe right now or working overtime to make sure that we're dealing with this crisis. And Representative Lilly, you mentioned that most of these contracts have been in place for 40% of their term. If we don't ratify them, then all these employees are going to see a pay cut right when they're working their absolute hardest. Is that correct?
Representative Lilly?
Mr. Chair and Representative Long, that is correct. Many of them are well along into the contract, almost half at midpoint. It's kind of an odd process how this works, but it's true. And Mr. Hubinger could be a little more specific on how many, you know, are at different points of the contract. Some of the contracts came in a little bit later. Last committee, we just added in the nurses and engineers, basically MnDOT, our MnDOT team. But if you want to pass to Mr. Hubinger, that would be helpful, I think.
Mr. Hubinger?
Mr. Chair and Representative Long and Lilly, as Representative Lilly indicated, most of these contracts have been implemented. And as he indicated earlier, they're effective retroactively to July 1. The only folks whose contracts and plans are not in effect are the nurses and the engineers, which were submitted during the session, and those employees that are unrepresented in that are covered under compensation plans. So I would estimate that somewhere around 85% of state employees' contracts are currently in effect.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Garofalo, I tried to get you before. I see you're back up again. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Although after I'm done talking, perhaps you very well may wish that you did not recognize me. So I do appreciate that.
Well, I tried to earlier. Maybe it would have been better then.
So,
about your thoughts more, I take it. Go ahead, Representative.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And first of all, Mr. Chairman, I just want to direct a question to my colleague and my friend, Representative Nelson. Representative Nelson used the word punishment, that somehow if we oppose these contracts or we insist that we actually pay for the stuff we're spending money on, that we're somehow punishing workers. Can Representative Nelson elaborate on this?
Representative Nelson.
There we go. I don't remember using the word punishment, but we negotiate these contracts in good faith with our employees, and they ratified them in good faith. We should do the same thing and ratify them. This is what we negotiated with them, and it's also my understanding with these contracts, there were savings that were negotiated for the state in these contracts, increases in healthcare costs for the employees, a greater share of the healthcare costs that they're paying, that if these contracts also go away, we end up having to going to cost the state more money and could lead us to the employees suing to get back that extra money they paid, and that includes us in the legislature. We have been paying higher costs in our health care, higher shared costs in our health care because of the since the start of the year because of these contracts. And again, that would revert back and cost the state more money if we don't ratify them.
And so, Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, you did use the word punish in your comments earlier. So I just want to be clear from your opinion that the opposition to these contracts has nothing to do with penalizing or hurting people or sanctioning them for a behavior. The opposition to these contracts is that they're mathematically impossible given the current fiscal situation we're in. So Representative Nelson, you and I have known each other a long time. I don't need to elaborate on this, especially over video conference. But I would just strongly object to somehow that my opposition to this is a sanction that I'm looking to hurt workers. Mr. Chairman, if we were in person here, I would probably get an amendment drawn up for these contracts. And what I would do is I would put an amendment in there that we perhaps would give remedial math lessons to the DFL caucus. Right now, I'm looking at the Vogel spreadsheet that got shared out. This is committing an additional $715 million of state resources in the tails. Doesn't even include the current biennial. And I could ask a member of the DFL to yield to recognize this, but I'm hoping that people on the call have been paying attention to the world we live in. The state of Minnesota has an unemployment rate of over 20%. More than one in five workers are currently unemployed. The private sector is what finances the government. It's not the other way around. And so at a time when we're going to be making extraordinarily challenging and difficult fiscal decisions, where we're going to have to make incredibly challenging decisions about important functions of government that are going to have to be reduced or eliminated to fund critical functions of government, at this very same time, we have a proposal that does what? It puts more obligations onto it. It puts more obligations onto the state of Minnesota at a time when the private sector, again, which pays for government, is contracting. So, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to ask for a roll call on the final passage of this bill. If there are any questions, Representative Vogel, I want to thank you for the work that you did. I would hope that members of the DFL took a minute to look at Representative Vogel's spreadsheet that he put together. These numbers were questionable for passage even when we had a budget surplus. But now, where we're facing a situation with billions of dollars of budget deficits in this current biennium and in the tails, we're talking about the potential for an eight-digit budget deficit. We're talking about a budget deficit that could exceed $10 billion with a B. To be putting more obligations onto the spreadsheet, it's fiscally irresponsible, it's mathematically impossible, and candidly, it's foolish. So I would ask members to vote no, but more importantly, I would ask members of the majority party to start paying attention to where the money's coming from, and more importantly, where it's going. Thank you.
And Representative Garofalo, on your request for a roll call on our procedures on all bills with our new process here are going to be roll call votes. So,
okay, Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to make sure that for a formal roll call, if this would be reflected in the minutes.
Yeah,
I wasn't sure if that was.
Remind people, because if you notice, the previous two bills we had up were also roll calls, even though one was broad consensus, I think unanimous, if I recall. But next up is Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't usually get too involved in these issues about contracts because this is technical and I leave this up to the members who are really involved in this and do a great job with it, like Representative Lilly. But I did just want to comment here because in my committee in Health and Human Services Finance, I heard kind of the same theme. And the theme is we should cut now, cut, because we're going to have a problem. And you know what? We all realize that the budget isn't what we thought it was going to be, but there will be a time for us to have to deal with the cuts. But right now, we have to deal with the current reality that we have. So Representative Garofalo loves to sort of do this kind of personal partisan thing that he loves to do. And you know, what I hear from the GOP, this theme is emerging, which is, you know, we know the GOP wants to cut government anyway. In the best of times, the GOP doesn't want government. The GOP, generally speaking, doesn't like government. And now it's great opportunity to cut, cut, cut. Well, guess what? That will come. We will have to look at that. But I do want to just respond to something that Representative Garofalo said in particular, this issue about the private sector financing government. Well, of course, that is true. But it's also true that the people that we employ are consumers. They spend money. They pay taxes. And guess what really drives the economy, Representative Garofalo? It's consumer spending. This is something that Representative Dabney was talking about earlier with reference to a different bill. Part of the reason that we're having a problem in our economy is because people are not out spending money, because consumer confidence has fallen. People are afraid to go and spend money, even the stores that are open. So this is all a cycle. So just to say, oh, because employment is down, which it is, unfortunately, we are all very, very aware of what's happening with unemployment. And the very people who are helping to deal with that unemployment issue are getting paid under these contracts. So this is not just a one-way thing. These employees of the state of Minnesota also need to have money in their pockets to spend to boost the economy. They are also workers and taxpayers, and we need to support them. So this idea that we should preemptively be cutting the budget and preemptively start tightening belts, I don't agree with that, Representative Garofalo. I don't agree, and I hope that a lot of my colleagues don't agree with that either, because we will be inflicting worse harm on our economy if we proceed that way. Thank you.
Representative Garofalo, your hand went up again. Representative Garofalo.
Damn mute button. Sorry. First of all, to my...
Everything you say, Representative Garofalo, is being recorded.
Yeah, sorry about that. My bad, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry. To my friend, Representative Liebling, first of all, it's good to see you, Representative Liebling. I'm not being partisan. I'm pointing out math. And part of me just wants to grab the laptop and go, say, DFL, pay attention. You don't have any money. Okay, we're broke, right? There's not going to be a magic money fairy falling out of the sky, just bestowing billions of dollars of us to spend. We're not preemptively proposing anything, Representative Liebling and members of the DFL. We're in a deficit right now. Income tax revenues, capital gains revenues, sales tax revenues have fallen off a cliff without historic proportion. And this delusion that the DFL thinks we can delay taking budget actions until after the election? What planet are you guys living on? So first of all, we just have to address the issue that when we're in a hole, we should stop digging, which is what this bill does. It keeps digging us deeper into a hole. But secondly, you got to get real, folks. We're going to have to make difficult decisions to balance our current budget. And every day that goes by that people ignore this or pretend that they don't have a problem makes matters worse. You're going to have to be prepared, Representative Dabney. The city of Minneapolis is going to come to our state legislature, and they're going to ask for money to bail them out. They're upside down $200 million. That's one city that's lost $200 million. Take a look at the state of Minnesota and where we're at. We're not talking about thousands of dollars or modest modifications. You're talking about recognizing that state government, where it's at, is a post-COVID-19 world. And unfortunately, the DFL is stuck in a pre-COVID-19 mindset. You guys need to get real and acknowledge that. Next week, we're going to have some revenue numbers that are going to come forward. Chairman Carlson and I have the opportunity to sit down in the Council of Economic Advisors meetings. Folks, these choices are going to be unpopular. And the sooner you acknowledge that and the sooner you square that with the public, the better off we're all going to be. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And hearing the debate this morning reminds me that in my years in the legislature, I don't think I've ever seen the state employee contracts come before the legislature without the GOP opposing them, even when they were negotiated by a GOP governor. So yes, we're in very difficult time. I am literally up late at night, concerned about the impact of the COVID-19 recession, if we're lucky it's a recession, on the people of the state of Minnesota. But what that calls us as legislators to do is not use that as the latest reason not to treat the people who do the work we ask them to do with respect and dignity. It's time that we instead look comprehensively at Minnesota's economy and rejecting these contracts, cutting the wages of the people who do the work in every community across the state, not only is short-sighted, it actually further damages the state's economy. People have been promised salaries. They've been promised benefits. They've gone forward and made commitments in their lives based on those promises. And we can exacerbate the challenges in front of our local communities, in front of our Main Street businesses, by refusing to step forward to the commitments made, or we can decide that it's a choice. We don't have to defer to math. We can instead take responsibility for our actions as a legislature and not punt it over to some big concept of only looking at part of the challenge and calling it math and calling it unalterable and calling it not our responsibility. This is an opportunity for us to lead, to assure the well-being of all Minnesotans by making sure that the state stands up to its commitments and to assure that we do our part to maintain and strengthen Minnesota's economy so that it can bounce back in the strongest possible position in the shortest possible way. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I've got a note, apparently must be on the phone. Representative Davids?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just need to correct my good friend, Representative Dabney, for saying in the past that GOP members haven't supported state contracts. I, for one, have supported many state contracts. I wanted to support this state contract. But first of all, members, we have committed to nothing. These have to be ratified. If we don't ratify them, they're not ratified. We have committed to nothing at this point. So there are GOP members that have voted for state contracts in the past. That was a blanket, inaccurate statement by Chair Dabney. And if we don't get this economy reopened on May 4th, which we're projected to do, if we don't, I think Chair Garofalo is going to be incorrect on his $10 billion because it's going to be much, much more than that. We have to realize that we are in unprecedented times. This is not business as usual. So we had better start preparing now because the money's not there. The state of Minnesota is broke. Let's deal with it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, any further discussion? Just a quick comment that I might make because it goes back to my early days in the legislature. I was here in 1973 when we passed PELRA. That's the Public Employee Labor Relations Act. And we are a collective bargaining state. And my view is that both sides, the representatives of the state employees, the various unions, and the administration sat down at the table in good faith and they bargained a contract. And I think it's important that we honor that bargaining process. The other thing is, I think we're in a very unique situation with this particular contract, because as Representative Lilly pointed out, we have many workers that are being impacted by these contracts that are literally our frontline workers, putting their lives at stake, putting their families at risk as they work with the patients that are impacted with the pandemic. So I would just say that that's an important point to kind of keep in mind as we decide on voting to ratify the amendment. But we are a collective bargaining state and have been for almost a half century. With that, Representative Lilly, any concluding comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I've definitely heard the discussion this morning, and it's kind of fun to see some, as Melissa or Speaker Hortman calls us, litter mates. It's kind of fun to see a couple of the litter mates, Representative Garofalo and Liebling, sharing their love together. These things have been negotiated in good faith. They're fair. These folks are, again, our face. I don't know about you guys, but I watch the 2 o'clock press conferences, and I'm pretty proud of our state workers and, you know, the university, what's going on, and all these people, the work they're doing. But I'm hearing what Representative Garofalo and Vogel and Hurtas and Davids are saying. I hear it. I know we're going to face this wall, and we're going to face it together, and we're ready. We're up for that task. We've faced deficits in the past, and we'll fight for Minnesota, a better Minnesota. But I would appreciate your support today on these contracts. I think these people are our team, and they are our neighbors, and it's not a perfect thing. I respect that, but I'd appreciate your support today, and I think it's an important message for Minnesota that we're gonna move forward.
Okay, and Representative Lilly, with your concluding comments, would you care to renew your motion?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to renew my motion that House File 2768, as amended, be recommended to be placed on the general register.
Okay, the motion is before us, and as I indicated earlier, when we're passing bills on final passage, they will be a roll call. In addition to that, we had a request that it be a roll call. So, Ms. Sparkman, are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if you could call the roll.
Representative Carlson?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Garofalo?
No.
Representative Albright?
No.
Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Representative Davids?
No.
Representative Dabney?
Aye.
Representative Juskowski?
No.
Representative Eklund?
Aye.
Representative Hamilton? Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Representative Hausman?
Aye.
Representative Hurtas?
No.
Representative Hornstein?
Aye.
Representative Kreisha? Representative Liebling?
Aye.
Representative Lilly?
Aye.
Representative Long?
Aye.
Representative Mariani?
Yes.
Representative Marquardt? Representative Nelson?
Aye.
Representative Neuer?
Aye.
Representative Pelosi?
Aye.
Representative Poppy?
Aye.
Representative Schumacher? Representative Scott?
No.
Representative Torkelson?
No.
Representative Vogel?
No.
Representative Wagenius?
Yes.
And if you could call the names again of anybody that was present and didn't vote to make sure they had the opportunity. I think Representative Hamilton indicated that there's a big meeting in his district with the governor and Representative Colin Peterson. So he indicated he may have to leave early, but be sure you call his name again in case he's still available.
Representative Hamilton. Representative Kreisha. Representative Marquardt. Representative Schumacher.
Okay, everybody's had an opportunity to vote. If you could give us the total, Ms. Barkman.
17 ayes, 8 nays.
Okay, the motion prevails, and House File 2768, as amended, has passed. Just by
thank
way
you,
of
Mr. Chair and members, thank you.
And thank you, Representative Lloyd. Next meeting is going to be Friday at 9:45, and we'll be adjourned in a moment. And we have four bills that we'll be taking up on Friday. Two of them, I think, are in our possession, and a couple of them are pending. But we'll clarify that final announcement before Friday. So see you folks again at 9:45 on Friday. With that, meeting adjourned.